Hello, this is Irene Bullard. Today I'll be reading the Pantograph, dated Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. Let's begin on the front page. Normal stands by uptown spending. Economic growth lauded despite nearly $94 million debt load. Nearly 20 years after the town of Normal celebrated becoming debt-free, officials have no plans to do it again and laud the growth a nearly $94 million debt load has brought the community. Sometimes you miss opportunities if your only goal is to be debt-free, said Mayor Chris Koos, whose tenure coincides both Normal's rising debt and the rebirth of downtown as uptown. Most of the debt that we have incurred has really driven economic development in the community, although we have done infrastructure debt as well, he said. It's all about being proactive. The story of Normal's debt, for the most part, is the story of Uptown. 15 years after that effort started, about $75 million of Normal's $85 million in general obligation bonds can be traced there, said Finance Director Andrew Hoon. Or Hun, from the town-owned Children's Discovery Museum to incentives and infrastructure for private projects, including the Marriott and Hyatt Place hotels. As Koos pointed out during a debt-focused mayoral campaign in 2017, $85 million in town borrowing for Uptown brought $145 million in private investment there, which he noted has not only improved quality of life, but boosted town sales and property tax revenue. Without Uptown, we would have had less debt for sure. Would we have had no debt? No, we would have had to eventually do something. The downtown area degrading wasn't sustainable, said Hoon. If that core part of the community is failing, it affects all of our revenue sources. Today, Normal has an unusually high debt load for a city its size, but a revitalized core and still sturdy finances overall, said Hoon. Bloomington, by comparison, has $91 million in obligations, but only $57 million in general obligation bonds, and its per capita debt is $1,162 versus $1,725 for Normal. The town knows, however, exactly which funding sources will pay down that debt. A mix of taxes, including property, sales, hotel, motel, and food and beverage, and what large projects it still has on the horizon. It has to be a thoughtful process, and that's probably the first best practice, said Hoon. If you're issuing debt under emergency circumstances or your planning is not about long-term needs, then you're on unstable ground. Shortly after Mayor Kent Carriker recognized the town's final debt service payment in December of 1999, he acknowledged it was in part an effort to free up borrowing capacity for a huge project like Uptown that would be well-planned and potentially highly lucrative. Officials are taking a similar planning-oriented approach now. The town's current debt has paid for not only a $4 million fire headquarters station at 606 South Main Street, but a $1.4 million study of a potential railroad underpass that extends to Normal's next likely bond-funded project, another fire station, to continue replacing aging stations and realign them for better response times. That included moving a station from 604 North Adelaide Street to Main Street and is expected to include two more moves. It makes sense to issue debt for something that's going to be around for 30, 40, or 50 years, said Hoon. It's completely a yes answer for that, assuming you've got the funding set aside, which we will do. In the long term, officials are not sure what the town's debt should be. The town measures its debt versus assessed value that has stayed between 9 and 11% since 2009. Official financial reports use indicators including percentage of personal income and debt per capita, and auditors use other metrics, some of which are proprietary and never fully explained publicly. For all intents and purposes, too much is when we don't have a revenue stream to support it, or when we can't maintain our current financial stability, said City Manager Pam Reese. What projects might be debt-funded, however, is a matter of debate. Coos has said repeatedly, neither a railroad underpass nor a sports complex, two pricey proposals the town has paid consultants to study, will proceed without substantial outside funding. When we were looking at the Main Street corridor, we were quite clear for that development it could not be like Uptown was. We didn't have the capacity to do that again, said Coos. He noted the town continues to have a AAA bond rating, which tells the lenders the town is an extremely good bet to pay back its obligations, and that its 5.2% debt-to-budget ratio would be exceptional for a home or a business. Hoon and Reese acknowledged, however, there's always a tension between borrowing and keeping taxes and fees as low as possible. The town has increased its property tax rate each year since 2006, including a 6.38% increase this year, and sewer and trash fees are set to rise over the next few years, in part, to address the town's lingering budget issues. That's a very high-level policy discussion for Pam and the council about priorities. It's tough to answer, said Hoon. These are really difficult long-term decisions to make about the direction of a community. City eyes eminent domain. Eminent domain is on the table as a possible tool for economic development in Bloomington. A majority of aldermen expressed that opinion to City Manager Tim Gleason during the City Council's work session Monday night. The discussion came in response to Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black's request to direct the City Manager to initiate eminent domain process on targeted downtown properties. Black did not mention specific properties to be targeted because property acquisitions are always discussed in closed council sessions, a point raised by Ward 2 Alderman David Sage during extensive discussion on the matter. Black made the request through the new meeting management ordinance that requires the mayor and aldermen to submit a form, including estimates of cost and staff time for a topic to be discussed at a work session before it ends up on a voting session agenda. I wanted to focus on downtown, said Black after the meeting, adding that not everyone on the council wanted to limit using eminent domain to just downtown properties. But a majority agreed that eminent domain is definitely in the toolbox, and if the city manager sees an opportunity, and perhaps he gets council feedback in closed session, there may be some eminent domain initiation in the near future, said Black. Eminent domain, the legal process that lets a government take property and compensate the owners at a fair market value, is a possibility for any city. The current elected Bloomington officials have not indicated previously that was an option they might pursue. Ward 3 Alderman Mboka Mwalambwe said that he thought Black's request, as originally presented, was too broad. If I am a property owner in the downtown, I am asking myself, what does this mean? Do they mean me? So I don't really want to send shivers up people's spines for them to think we are targeting their property when we may not be. I don't know what this community has ever used eminent domain, said Ward 6 Alderman Karen Schmidt. So if you're asking us if this is on the table or off the table, it is on the table for me. Once we get to targeted downtown properties, I would think eminent domain is the tool in our toolkit. Once we've exhausted everything else and we have a legal rationale for using that tool, we should use it, she added. While no properties were specifically mentioned during Monday's council discussion, redevelopment of several vacant downtown properties was the focus of the creation of the Downtown Southwest Tax Increment Financing, TIF, District in 2016. The front and center and former Commerce Bank buildings in the 100 block of North Center Street and the former Elks Lodge across Madison Street make up 86% of the TIF district. The building's conditions have raised public questions about code enforcement and whether some of the buildings should be condemned. Several other initiatives Black proposed did not get enough support from aldermen to be discussed further, including directing staff to come up with new fees and taxes for downtown stakeholders to fund downtown projects, as well as adding a fee for paying a water bill by cash or check instead of automatic bill pay. The city-owned Grossinger Motors Arena exited fiscal 2018 on April the 30th, $665,099 in the red. That was an $8,419 improvement from the $673,518 operating loss in fiscal 2017, according to a year-end report presented to the council by VenueWorks, the Ames, Iowa-based venue management firm the city hired in April of 2016. The downtown facility simply did not bring in enough revenue, said Lynn Cannon, who directs the 7,000-seat arena's daily operation for VenueWorks. She also said the facility is projected to lose $495,000 in fiscal 2019. I think that loss range of approximately $500,000 is going to be an average, said Cannon. I think that is where this building is going to fall, even at its most successful. Judge orders sheriff at next hearing in custody case. The legal roadblocks that have delayed the return of a Massachusetts man to McLean County for a family court hearing need to be removed, a judge said Monday, before issuing a subpoena to the sheriff to appear at the next hearing. The long-running custody battle between Michael Cadena and Amber Buck over custody of their 4-year-old son, Michael Jr., has come to a grinding halt while authorities figure out how to serve an arrest warrant for direct civil contempt on Cadena for refusing to return to Illinois with the child. Associate Judge Leanne Hill issued the warrant September the 7th after Cadena failed to comply with more than 6 previous court orders to attend proceedings with the child. As of Monday, Cadena had not been arrested. Buck's lawyer, Tristan Bullington, said that he has consulted with staff at the McLean County Sheriff's Department, who said the issue appears to be with warrant's connection to a civil rather than a criminal case. Civil warrants cannot be entered into a national database of criminal data, including arrest warrants accessible by all law enforcement agencies, said Bullington. Sheriff John Sandage was not available for comment Monday, but in remarks after the warrant was first issued, he said he expected Cadena to be brought to Illinois by a private prisoner transport firm that handles interstate inmate pickups. Hill declined to issue a second directive requested by Bullington, ordering the Sheriff's Department to go to Massachusetts. Hill set a September 27th hearing for Sandage to provide information on how the warrant can be enforced. Cadena also is set to be sentenced that day on the criminal contempt charge. Bullington suggested that Cadena be required to reimburse the county for the cost of bringing his son back to Illinois. In addition to the criminal contempt, Cadena also has been found in civil contempt for failing to comply with the court's orders. The only way to purge himself of that charge is to bring the boy to Illinois, a requirement he has refused to fulfill so far. He could end up sitting in custody indefinitely, Hill said of the civil contempt. The judge expressed frustration with the more than 10-month delay in the custody case that started in 2014 with Cadena's petition to seek custody of the child. The father has alleged that Buck emotionally and physically abused the child during the time that she was using drugs. Cadena left the state with the boy shortly after he was awarded custody in February 2017. Buck's legal rights to parent the child were later restored. She is on probation on drug charges. Hill acknowledged that her December retirement will come before the case is resolved, adding that she will consider Bullington's suggestion that the case be reassigned to another judge before December to allow for hearings to be set that cannot be scheduled during Hill's remaining tenure. Still pending is a ruling by a Massachusetts judge on whether that state should have emergency jurisdiction in the matter. Cadena's East Coast lawyers argued that the child's ongoing care by therapists should not be disrupted by moving the boy to Illinois to stay with his mother, as ordered by Hill. Daily Digest. Outage closes Fox Creek School. There will be no school today at Fox Creek Elementary School in southwest Bloomington because of an ongoing power outage. All other McLean County Unit 5 schools will be operating normally, district officials said in a Facebook post. A major electrical issue left the school at 3910 Timberwolf Trail without power since around noon Monday, and service isn't expected to be restored until at least late afternoon today, officials said. Ameren reported a power outage affecting only one customer in that area as of late Monday night. It had no report on the cause and no estimated time for service restoration. Theater Company to offer class. The Aquila Theater Company will offer a free participatory masterclass for high school and college students from 6 to 7 p.m. September 28th at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Members of the company will perform Mary Shelley's Frankenstein on September 29th at the BCPA. This class will explore some of the vocal and movement acting techniques used by the actors in rehearsal and performances. The master class is free and open to students, but registration is required by noon, September 27th. The class will be filled on a first-come, first-admitted basis. Contact the BCPA ticket office at 309-434-2777 or email Pam Starks at pstarks@cityblm.org to register. Today in History. Today is Tuesday, September 18th, the 261st day of 2018. There are 104 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On September 18th, 1975, newspaper heiress Patricia Hearst was captured by the FBI in San Francisco, 19 months after being kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army. On this date, thought for today, we want the facts to fit the preconceptions. When they don't, it is easier to ignore the facts than to change the preconceptions. Written by Jessamine West, American author, 1902 to 1984. Today's flick fact. Question. In downtown Bloomington along East Washington Street, there's not much space between the street and the doors or box office to the Castle Theater. Do you know why? The answer is, first opened in 1916, the Castle Theater was built when Washington Street was only two small lanes, and the theater then was a distance to the street. It got substantially closer to the pavement in 1956 when Washington was widened into four lanes. In fact, part of the castle marquee had to be rebuilt then because it otherwise would have literally jutted out into Washington Street. C-SPAN bus visits Bloomington High. There is a photograph of the interior of the bus, and it says, Donzel Johnson, 18, a Bloomington High School senior, is photographed by C-SPAN marketing representative Gene Green as he takes over the set on C-SPAN's tour bus Monday at BHS. Students took an in-depth look at government as the bus tours across the country. And there are a lot of happy, smiling faces in that photograph. And now the article. Rich Baldwin's American government class did not have to go far to engage with the real deal on Monday. C-SPAN provides a tremendous amount of material for you in the classroom, but students may not access that without a specific assignment, said Baldwin, a Bloomington High School teacher. For them to visit us, that was an immediate connection to what we were doing in class. C-SPAN came to the Twin Cities via a 45-foot bus as part of its 50 Capitals tour, an effort to visit every state capital over 14 months leading up to the midterm election in November. Springfield will become the 41st capital visited this week as the bus snakes across the Midwest toward the East Coast. That gave 100 BHS students the chance to try out everything the educational vehicle has to offer, from a functioning TV studio and a classroom with smart TVs to instructional tablets full of C-SPAN videos and lessons, to a selfie station with Washington, D.C. backgrounds. Baldwin said a big hit for his class was an interactive U.S. Constitution on the C-SPAN website that highlights portions of the venerable text and links them to videos that show their effects in the real world. Students could also grab printed Constitution booklets on the bus. We want people to know there is this resource that provides nonpartisan coverage of your government, said Joel Bacon, a marketing representative for C-SPAN, who mans the bus. It's free and open and on the internet. Some students also got to meet and speak with State Senator Bill Bradley and State Representative Dan Brady, both Republicans, and Bloomington aldermen who visited the bus. Bill Brady and Dan Brady are not related. Bacon said that he hopes the students who visited the bus will enter C-SPAN's 2019 Student Cam documentary competition. Middle and high school students who create a 5 or 6 minute film using C-SPAN footage and answering "What does it mean to be American?" can win one of 150 prizes totaling $100,000. Submissions for the contest open November the 1st and they close January 20th. More details are available online at studentcam.org. We had about 3,000 entries last year from 5,600 students, and it's great to see them get involved that way, said Bacon. That's why we do all this. Normal pushes road work to spring. Some road work Normal officials hoped would be finished by this fall has been pushed into 2019. Resurfacing of College Avenue from Beach Street to Blair Drive, Vernon Avenue from Linden Street to Grandview Drive, and Broadway Avenue from Vernon to Phoenix Avenue is now likely to start next spring, said town engineer Ryan Otto, though related projects are done or remain on track. Sealing work on Towanda between Fort Jesse and Rob Rhodes will likely begin in early to mid-October, Otto said, of work approved Monday by Normal City Council. Freehill asphalt of Watsika will be paid $66,223 for the job. The town also is paying Freehill $29,134 to do similar work on Northtown Road from Towanda Avenue to Pipeline Road, scheduled to wrap up this fall. Otto said, curb and gutter, sidewalk, and hot mix asphalt surface coursework will continue for several weeks on Grandview Drive from Spear Drive to College, and Greenbrier Drive from Hoover Drive to Taft Drive and Hoover and Truman Drive. Crews have already finished work on North Towanda from College to Dustin and Chadwick Drive to Fort Jesse, Dillon Drive from Waverly Drive to Towanda, Cortland Avenue from Bentley Drive to Towanda, Aaron Drive from Parkside Road to Dwyer Court, Fell Avenue from Vernon to Irvington Street, and Cherry Street to Willow Street, and Bone Drive from Hovey Avenue to Bryan Drive, except for pavement markings and cleanup work, he said. Road construction of Bloomington will receive $1.8 million for those 10 projects. Improvements to College, Vernon, and Broadway are budgeted at $926,654. In other business, the Council approved a new zoning plan for Lincoln College property off Robb Road. The area is currently a single parcel zoned for university use but will be subdivided into three parcels, two for businesses and one for multifamily residential use. The Trikoke University of Beauty Culture opened this year in one of the buildings to be rezoned for business at 755 Robb Road. Lincoln College President David Gerlach said this summer the college ultimately would like to sell the property and rent the academic space that it needs. The council heard an update from member Kathleen Lorenz on the 2018 Landmarks Illinois Richard H. Dryhouse Foundation Preservation Award for Stewardship, which the town got for overseeing Broadview Mansion. Lorenz attended an event in Chicago where the town officially received the award. Flooding, heat complicate BN's Florence response. Heavy rainfall and high wind gave way Monday to flooding and intense heat for central Illinoisans helping North Carolina residents dealing with the devastation delivered by Hurricane Florence. Initially, when they got there, they were dealing with heavy rainfall and some winds. Corn Belt Energy Director of Communications, Hillary Cherry, said Monday afternoon. Cherry had just spoken with one of the eight Corn Belt linemen helping to restore electricity in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Now it's extremely hot and they are dealing with flood water and it's only going to get worse, said Cherry, adding a bucket truck was in 4 feet of water by the time it finished one job, rebuilding an electric line. Corn Belt crews dealing with flooding and downed trees had to get two jobs on Monday using John boats and then had to manually climb up the poles to make repairs and restore electricity, Cherry said. The crews, consisting of eight linemen, two large bucket trucks, and two digger derricks based in Bloomington, left late last week for Fayetteville to help South River EMC with rebuilding the shattered electric system. Corn Belt is among 22 electric cooperatives from Illinois, Ohio, and Tennessee, providing 200 line personnel to assist in restoring electricity, South River said Monday. About 500,000 homes and businesses remain without power as the death toll from Florence climbed to 32. Even though Florence was downgraded late last week to a tropical storm, the rain continued in the Carolinas and floodwaters rose as the storm, which still covered parts of six states, turned northeast. Emergency crews delivered food and water to Wilmington, which for a time was entirely cut off by floodwaters on Monday, and rescuers used helicopters and boats elsewhere to rescue people trapped by still rising rivers. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper warned that dangerously high water would persist for days. As of right now, we do not have a time frame for how long our crews will be in North Carolina, Cherry said. However, if they are needed for an extended period of time, our crews will return, and we may send additional crews to assist. Meanwhile, American Red Cross, serving central and southern Illinois, has sent 68 disaster relief workers to help to shelter, feed, and support people affected by Florence, said Amber McGrath, Red Cross Regional Communications Director. 11 of those staff and volunteers are from Central Illinois, including Deb Getting from Urbana, a disaster program specialist who covers Bloomington Normal area. Red Cross on Monday was providing shelter to more than 15,000 people in more than 150 shelters, nearly all in North Carolina. More than 3,000 Red Cross disaster relief workers nationwide have been mobilized. Midwest Food Bank in Normal has five semi-trailer trucks of food boxes and hygiene supplies ready to go, with supplies on hand to make five more, and three drivers are on call, ready to drive to North Carolina. We've come to the end of the first half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.